Cast of the Diane Rehm Show is recorded, so we're not taking any new phone calls.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. 8 years ago, author Anne Hood's five-year-old daughter died after contracting a virulent form of strep. In 2007, she wrote a semi-autobiographical novel about how she dealt with her loss. It was titled The Knitting Circle. Now, in a new book, Anne tells the story of five families hoping to adopt baby girls from China. It's also the story of an adoption agency owner whose three-year-old daughter died in a freak accident. The new book is titled The Red Thread. Anne Hood joins me in the studio. And you, of course, are always an important part of the program. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. You can join us also on Facebook or send us a tweet. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you here.
Thank you.
The Red Thread is a beautiful title. Explain what it means.
There's a Chinese concept called the red thread in which they believe that our children are connected to us by an invisible red thread, and that no matter how frayed or tangled the thread becomes, our child is waiting at the other end. Isn't that beautiful?
Just beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, tell us about your own child.
Well, we lost our daughter Grace, as you said, in 2002, very suddenly. She spiked a fever after her ballet class and died 36 hours later. And we left that hospital, as you all can imagine, stunned, in disbelief. And it was impossible for me to move through my grief for months. Everything that I had relied on in my life were always words. Reading and writing, and they just failed me after losing Grace. And about 6 months later, I started to knit, and that's what led to the book, The Knitting Circle. But about 2 years later, we decided to adopt a baby ourselves from China. She was waiting at the end of our red thread. And we have a beautiful six-year-old now named Annabelle.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Thank you.
I think one never gets over the loss of the child, especially when something like that happens out of the blue. You don't expect it. There's been no prolonged illness.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You know, it's so strange that sometimes it's been 8 years. It was 8 years, April 18th. I still am driving down the street and have to stop saying, Grace died. You just can't believe it never really sinks in, I guess. And you learn to live with the grief. It doesn't go away, but it just lodges, like all things, you know, somewhere in your heart. And it's been so interesting since our adoption that grief and joy can coexist like that.
So the adoption led you into the writing of this book. Talk about how that evolved.
You know, it was so interesting because unlike other countries, in China, you really will never learn the history of your little girl. It's illegal to keep girls. It's illegal to abandon them. So the women there are really thrust into a quandary. And many of them abandon their babies right at the orphanage door so that they will have a good life. You know, they're so brave, these women.
They assume they'll be adopted by parents in America or Europe.
That's right. Spain, the Netherlands, and the United States actually have the highest adoptions
I
from
see.
China. And I look at Annabelle and I wonder about her history that we'll never know. And as a fiction writer, my imagination makes up little stories. And I thought, well, maybe I will write about that. Mm-hmm. And so each section of the novel, The Red Thread, ends with the mothers in China having to abandon their daughters and their stories. So that's what really motivated it, looking at my little beautiful baby and wondering who that brave woman was who left her.
How old was Annabelle when you came to get her?
She was 11 months old when we adopted her, and her story is a little bit different. The babies are actually usually found 2 to 3 days old. She was closer to 6 months. They estimate 5 to 6 months old. And so her story has some twist, again, that we'll never know, that perhaps her mother had tried to hide her from the authorities to keep her, or perhaps her mother had died. Both of those stories are in the novel because it's a possibility, you know. But she was 11 months old, very underfed, but in great health, and the happiest baby. She would just look at us and throw her head back and laugh. And I thought, we did the right thing. She should be with us. This is our girl.
Did you choose her from photographs before you went to China? How did that work?
Yeah, in China, the Chinese government chooses for you. And I'll tell you a really interesting story. And the idea of the red thread really comes to play in this story. Grace died on April 18th. That is Annabelle's birthday.
Oh.
Isn't that amazing?
Amazing.
So we got a phone call from our adoption agency in Boston saying that China had chosen our baby for us and that we could come and sign off, you know, come to the agency. And they said, she's cute, she's healthy, and her birthday is April 18th. Well, I think I actually stopped breathing for a second. And my husband luckily could keep going, and he said, that's perfect. And when we hung up, I said, perfect? I can't bake cupcakes on April 18th for a little girl's birthday. And he said, no, this is the baby we're meant to have.
And when you got there and saw her for the first time, it still
That's
is very emotional.
Oh, I just, you know, they handed us, they called our name, and we were in a government office building, very impersonal. Babies lined up, Chinese authorities lined up, families lined up. We're standing there, you know, very kind of military. And then they called our last name, and I stepped forward, and they just put her in my arms.
Oh.
And the picture is great. You know, that I'm crying kind of like I am right now. I get teary still.
What an extraordinary event. How many parents lined up? How many officials lined up? How many babies lined up?
So there were 10 babies. Huh. Probably 15 officials. They called them nannies, you know, the orphanage workers, each holding a baby, the head of the orphanage, and then a bunch of government people. But the families we traveled with, completely by serendipity, all had other children and had those children with them. We had our son, Sam, who was 11 at the time, but everybody had kids. So there were a lot of people, 20 parents, but many children. Some also adopted from China, you know, slightly older ones, but other, you know, natural-born children, quite a mix. So it was the happiest, noisiest group, you know, and tears everywhere and photos taken and, you know.
Sam is your natural-born child.
Yes, he is.
Why did you decide to adopt as opposed to having another child after Grace died?
There were a couple reasons, actually. I was slightly older, still could have had a baby, but it took some help. And we started down that path, and then we looked at each other and said, wait a minute, there are babies out there. We don't need to do this. And once we decided, it felt so right. So we talked to all of our friends who had adopted and looked at domestic adoptions, every country you can imagine. And, you know, our emotional reserve was kind of low, Diane, at that time still, even though it was a few years after Grace died. And we were so afraid of having an adoption fall through that we really landed on China because it was the most foolproof at the time. Now, the adoption world changes, and China now has a very long wait. But at the time we did it, it was a year from when we walked in the door until I was holding that baby. And that's what we needed.
Now, you have read, as I have read, about this unfortunate young boy, age 7, mm-hmm. who was sent back to Russia by himself, by
yes.
his adopted mother. Now, what's the difference between what happens in Russia and what happens in China?
Yeah, very different, actually. In China, they want to send to other countries the best, healthiest babies. You know, they have a very big, still, cultural belief in saving face. They want people to see that Chinese kids are terrific. The Russian adoptions, when the kids are older and they've been in orphanages, it's really a recipe often, I'm afraid, for problems. And in China, you get mostly babies, and you go one time. You spend 2 weeks there. Western doctors often travel with the adoption groups. The babies are checked out medically. The American Embassy checks them out medically. We had a two-week, every day full. It was a busy 2 weeks when we went to get Annabelle. In Russia, you have to go twice. You go, you get a baby assigned to you. You go home, sometimes for several months. The return to Russia, sometimes that child's not there. You have to take a different baby. So everything is different. A lot more variables in the Russian adoptions.
What kinds of clearance did you and your husband have to go through to adopt a child?
You know,
actually,
China? It was like a full-time job, Diane. I laugh when I think about it. Every day, I'm like, now we have these things. I had my checklist, you know, very organized. But we had home studies, three home studies, where they just come and they had to interview Sam, who was, you know, as I said, nine when we started this. And interviewed friends. We had to have recommendations. There's a financial piece to it that they want to make sure the kids are going to get, you know, into safe homes that can afford them, that we had a bedroom for her. And then you file your papers, send them off to China. And this was actually the worst part. Then nothing happens. Your full-time job stops and you wait. And we waited almost 6 months before we got that phone call that we had a baby.
And after that, how long between the phone call and the time you went to China?
You know, it's so funny because it was probably 6 weeks. It felt eternal. I thought, we're never getting there. And I kept picturing, you know, we had this picture of her little face. She had on a hand-knit pink sweater, which touched me as a knitter, you know. And although she looked adorable, I could almost see a little cloud over her head saying, hurry up. Come to China.
Your imagination certainly took hold, Anne Hood. She is the author of a new novel. It's titled The Red Thread. She's also the best-selling author of The Knitting Circle. And we're going to take just a short break. We'll be right back.
Coming up Monday on the Kojo Namdi Show, the battle over breastfeeding in public. A Maryland mom organizes a nurse-in at a local mall after being asked to leave while feeding her baby. Plus, conservative politicians embrace the feminist label. We explore whether they're creating a new brand of female power or merely exploiting feminist rhetoric. The Kojo Namdi Show, noon till 2 Monday on WAMU 88.5.
NPR is making it easier than ever to stay informed. Get local and national news on your mobile device web browser at wamu.npr.org. With NPR Mobile, you can listen to local headlines, weather, and traffic, plus national headlines and the story of the day. WAMU 88.5 and NPR, information on demand at wamu.npr.org.
This broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is recorded, so we're not taking any new phone calls.
Anne Hood is the author of 10 books, including the best-selling novel, The Knitting Circle, and the memoir, Comfort, A Journey Through Grief. But this story is a story that encompasses joy as well. It's titled The Red Thread. It is a novel. It talks about not only families who attempted and in some cases are successful in adopting children from China, little girls who are for the most part unwanted in China, and in some cases the mothers, the courageous mothers who've been forced to give up those little girls. Anne Hood, here's an email. She says, Tell us about the name Annabelle. It's a unique name, yet our neighbor has a 12-year-old adopted Chinese girl also named Annabelle. Does this name have a connection to a Chinese name?
How interesting. No, not that I know of, actually. Annabelle's Chinese name was Lu Fujing.
Lu Fujing.
Yes, and Lu is the last name given to all the babies from that orphanage because it's in the town of Ludi. Fu means good luck because they want their luck to be better. So they're all called Lu Fu, and then the third part is given by their nanny who takes care of them in the orphanage. Jing means bright, not like smart bright, but someone who brightens a room. So it's a lovely name, and it suits her. And we considered using part of her Chinese name, but then we thought, you know, it was given by the orphanage. It isn't a name her mom had given to her. And Grace's middle name was Annabelle. And we were so cautious about giving her any kind of legacy, anything that was not all her own. So although we loved the name Annabelle, we decided to not use it until our children, our son and my stepdaughter, I had landed on the name Mamie. I have to confess, I loved it. I thought it was as cute as could be. But they said, why don't we just name her Annabelle? Mm-hmm. It honors Grace, and it's a beautiful name. And so we looked at each other. Well, the kids won, so it is a beautiful name. I don't think it has a Chinese connection. It has a personal connection for us.
And read for us, if you would, from the novel. Set this up for us.
Well, you know, one of the things the novel talks about and explores is what brings people to adoption. And, you know, it often comes at the end of a journey that's been really kind of fraught with disappointment and loss, different kinds of loss. And you really bond with those people that you meet through the adoption experience. And we're still friends with them. We just had a party. All the families went to for dim sum with our girls, you know.
How wonderful.
And so this talks a little bit about that process. They had been through something. All of them had. People who came here to adopt had been through infertility failures, arguments, lost hope and expectation. They were vulnerable, her families. She knew this. I have so much to tell you, Maya said, pressing the palms of her hands together. So much information, so many details. On cue, her assistant Samantha handed out the red folders with everything spelled out for them. Don't feel nervous, Maya said. You've already accomplished step one on the list, orientation. Again, polite laughter. Maya's gaze settled on the couple in the back. The man with his walrus mustache and light brown curls looked familiar. Had they been here before and changed their minds? The woman, a pixie with short dark hair and a sunburned nose, did not seem familiar. Maybe they lived near her and she had seen the man on the street or in the grocery store. Before we go through so much information, Maya said, let's introduce ourselves. If all of you leave here deciding you will indeed adopt a baby from China, then it is very likely you will be in the same DTC group. DTC, the one taking notes said, documents to China. The day they arrive becomes the day your wait begins, Maya explained. It is very likely that you will all travel together to China, that your babies will come from the same province, the same orphanage. It is very likely that you will become lifelong friends.
Anne Hood reading from her new novel, The Red Thread. Tell us about Maya and why she opens an adoption agency.
Maya suffered a loss, not unlike mine, and it's not, you know, unusual that I always land there when I'm starting thinking of my protagonists. How do you make your life better after a dreadful loss? She loses her baby in a freak accident, her little girl, for which she blames herself. And, you know, when I think about grief, I think about all of the aspects of it. We immediately see the sadness of it, but often there's guilt involved or hope. And so that's the combination that has her open it. She feels guilty, but by helping these families find daughters, it brings hope back to her and joy. She believes she's kind of doing her life's work.
How does her child die?
After a bath, rushing, like many mothers do, she drops her, and the fall kills the little girl.
Oh, my.
And, of course, it's one of these things where there's no one, there's not guilt, there's no one to blame. But she keeps replaying that those few minutes, being tense, being a mom with too much to do, and slipping when on a wet floor.
Here's an email from Kathy in Traverse City, Michigan. She says, my son and daughter-in-law are in the process of adopting a little girl. The birth mother's circumstances are such that she neither financially nor culturally is able to raise a child out of wedlock. She only shared the birth of this child with her mother and sister, keeping it secret from the male members of her family. As the little girl's new grandmother, I would love to someday share my admiration for the strength and love this birth mother demonstrated in doing what is best for her child. I'm stunned by her courage. Mm. Should she ever share this with her entire family, we hope to become her friend, given that this is a person we would surely like to get to know.
What a lovely sentiment, isn't it? You know, we just took Annabelle back to China so that she could see her orphanage. We learned it was going to be torn down.
Oh, my.
And we thought, there goes the shred of history we have. So we flew there, went to Hunan province, went to her little town, and the orphanage director, it so embraced this little girl. We have pictures of them kissing and touching each other's faces, but she was able to see her crib, able to see where she'd spent, you know, 5 months of her life, and it was so important. But we asked the orphanage director, if her mother ever shows up, we want to know. We want to be able to thank her. She told us it was so unlikely. You know, she said, fine, I'll make a note of that. But honestly, they don't show up. It's illegal there, and they're afraid. And the chance of her meeting her mother is, you know, nil practically.
In reality, and you incorporate this story into the book, there's a baby found in a park with a tiny little sweet potato.
Yes. You know, this was a story that we actually had heard, but it was unproven, that one of the babies was found in a basket with a sweet potato. Telling the person who found her and telling the future parents, I'm from a rural area, and this is the most valuable thing we have, this baby and this sweet potato, which can feed our family, you know, but we want you to have it so you see how much we treasured her.
What a story. Mm-hmm. 800-433-8850. I have the feeling that so many people are so engrossed in your story that they are reluctant to join us by phone. But I do invite you, give us a call, 800-433-8850. Tell us about some of the couples in your book. Start with Emily and Michael.
Yeah, the best friend of Maya, who runs the adoption agency, Emily, has married someone with a adolescent daughter. I'm a stepmom, and it's something that I thought about a lot and think about a lot, how you try to blend the families, and it can be really difficult.
Of course.
Right? We know this. And so I wanted to sort of illustrate. I am so sympathetic for Michael, the husband who's trying to satisfy everyone. He wants his new wife happy. He loves his daughter. He wants to please the ex-wife, and he's always caught. He's always caught and almost never does the right thing. But they are about to adopt a baby. She's been unable to maintain a pregnancy, and she finally steps forward and says, we're going to do it. And once she makes the decision, boy, does her life feel better. She has felt trapped. She's felt sad. She's felt kind of shut out with the daughter, you know, the stepdaughter. And this decision really changes a lot for her. And I'm really rooting for her all along. I'm rooting for all of them.
You have written a blog about compassionate friends. Mm-hmm. Who are they?
Boy, what an important organization. Compassionate Friends is an all-volunteer national organization for families who've lost children. And when Grace died, my husband, who's a better group person than I am, he immediately found them, and he immediately started going to their meetings, and it helped him tremendously. Before long, he was even a facilitator at the meetings.
Really?
I was more reluctant. You know, I'm just not someone who feels like standing up in a group and telling my story. I write. You know, it's a private thing in a way.
Yeah.
But I went.
Until I went. Yeah. And then, of course, you're speaking to the world.
Absolutely. Yes. And that's different. I have sort of the shield of the book, right? Yeah. But to stand up, you know, in with a group of strangers and talk about Grace right after it happened, I couldn't do it. The groups really intimidated me, but I saw how much they helped people. And by attending a few of the meetings, I made friends who we would sit at each other's houses and just talk about our lost children. You know, it was incredibly helpful. And I've now become active in the national organization. Their meeting is every July. This year it's in Washington, D.C., actually. And they have speakers and, sadly, new families every year who have lost children coming for help, basically, through workshops, through books, and through the speakers who share their loss with them. And it's really an amazing group of people.
How difficult was it for you to come to the decision that somehow you needed to replace the child you had lost?
You know, it was really a time of soul searching, because what we knew is that we couldn't ever replace Grace. She was irreplaceable.
Right.
But did that mean we couldn't have subsequent children? You know, someone who would be her own little person and make her mark in our family. And I'll tell you, one day I was driving the car and Sam was in the back seat, and I glanced in the rearview mirror, and that back seat stretched so emptily. It was empty, and he looked so small. And I thought about how he and Grace used to sit back there and torture each other but have a lot of fun. And I thought, you know, a sibling is a gift, and this kid's been through a lot, and he should have this gift again. I mean, it was really one of the turning points for me. And when we told him, we were afraid he would say, we can't replace Grace. He was so happy. He embraced the idea. And we'd had Annabelle all of 2 hours when Sam looked at us and said, our family is revived.
Anne Hood, the new book is titled The Red Thread. And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We have some callers waiting, and we'll open the phones now. First to Utica, New York. Good morning, Betsy. Let's see. Betsy, are you there?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning. I remember reading excerpts of your story in various magazines, and I'm very, very touched that you're on the air. It's great.
Thank you.
I want to share a quick story about my, I have two adopted daughters, one from Vietnam, one from Moldova. My daughter, who was born in Vietnam, has this gift from her birth mother, which I'm going to try not to cry if I talk about it, which is a 4-page letter expressing how much she loves her, how much she hopes that she has a better life. There's a picture of her as a newborn with her birth mother, and I've shared that with her. She's almost 16 now. And it's such, for an adopted child, it's such a special gift.
Betsy, did she ever try to get in touch with her birth mother?
No, she's one of the children, and adopted children can have a wide range of curiosity about their birth, their origins. She is not particularly voiced any interest in that. I mean, I showed her the letter translated, she was, you know, you could see that she was very touched by it, but she hasn't said, no, let's go back to Vietnam and see if I can find, you know. Mm-hmm.
How old is she?
She's almost, she'll be 16 in 2 weeks.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, what a lovely gift.
That is incredible. And I wish that Annabelle had something like that. You know, she told me something interesting when we were going to China. She said, I don't want to live with my other mommy. I just want to see her face.
Huh.
And I think that speaks for a lot of adopted children.
Exactly.
Well, my other daughter, who was abandoned in the hospital, she's from Moldova. She's only 10. She has enormous curiosity. Mm. Why do you think she loves me? Do you think she? Oh. You know, why did she give me up? And it's you know, you try to assure them that,
of course,
you know, they wanted a better life for you.
Right. Right. Well, that letter might be what makes your daughter feel secure, though, that she has that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm glad you called, Betsy. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's
Thanks, Betsy.
Go now to Cincinnati, Ohio. Good morning, Leslie.
Hello. I don't know if I fit into this conversation, but I lost an adult child. He was in his 20s. He fell 60 feet.
Oh, Leslie.
And I had just talked to him the night before, and I was going to pick him up on my way back from court. I'm an attorney.
Yes.
And in the meantime, right before that, my husband had been killed in a car accident, and my father had died, so I had been living with my mother. And even though I'm grown up and I have my life, you know, I have a grown-up daughter in New York,
yes.
I constantly think, and I don't know that it's the right thing to do, about adopting a child or getting a foster child.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that would change my mother's whole life because I have given up my whole house and moved in with her.
Yes.
But I wonder if it's normal for someone who loses an adult like that. And he was just a beautiful, gorgeous person and the most kind person in the world to anybody.
Leslie, I'm so sorry for your loss. What a tragedy after losing her father as well.
Yes, how terrible.
What about older women, men, who decide that they'd like to adopt?
You know, I think it's great because the wonderful thing about bringing a child back into your life is that you have to kind of get out of your head and help them. They need everything from getting their socks put on to dinner cooked, and you suddenly have a different purpose. I mean, you're an attorney. I know you have an active life, but there's something about a child who really can changes for the better.
Leslie, good luck to you. Ann Hood is the author of The Red Thread. Short break. We'll be right back.
Good morning. You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show on WAMU 88.5. A Prairie Home Companion is coming up next.
WAMU 88.5 is proud to be a media sponsor for the 30th Annual Washington Folk Festival, tonight until 7 at Glen Echo Park in Maryland. We'll celebrate the diversity of our rich cultural heritage with music, dance, and storytelling. More information on the Washington Folk Festival is at WAMU.org under calendar.
My name is Tara Boyle, and I'm a producer with the Kojo Namdi Show.
We can be both intensely local and incredibly global.
We did a show on Iran, and so many listeners had so many interesting comments and thoughts. And later in the week, we did a show about intensely local neighborhood issues in Washington, D.C., and people will bring incredibly interesting perspectives to that as well.
The Kojo Namdi Show, connecting your neighborhood with the world. Weekdays at noon on WAMU 88.5.
Visit WAMU.org to learn how you make everything on WAMU 88.5 possible, from your favorite shows to special events in the community. Member support is the backbone of our operation, so please become a new member or renew your support conveniently online at WAMU.org, and thank you.
85 degrees in Northwest Washington, it's 10:39.
This broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is recorded, so we're not taking any new phone calls.
Two other characters in Ann Hood's new novel, The Red Thread, are Susanna and Carter, and they are actually parents to a child with Fragile X syndrome. Mm-hmm. And talk about them in your book and why and how they come to their own decisions.
Suzanne lost her mother when she was young, and she'd had a great relationship with her. And as a child, she developed this fantasy of the perfect mother-daughter relationship that she would give to a daughter someday, as many of us do. And she believed that her mother was sort of, you know, standing behind her, encouraging this because theirs had been shortened. And she and her husband Carter have a baby, and they learn pretty quickly that the child has disabilities and find out that it's Fragile X syndrome, which is a syndrome that covers many possible disabilities with children. Even eyesight can be affected. It can present kind of like autism or forms of mental retardation. And their daughter, Clara, has the worst form of it. She has just about everything Fragile X syndrome can have. And Suzanne, to her surprise, feels like she might not love this child as much as she wanted. Her disappointment for her dream of the perfect mother-daughter relationship gets in the way. And she runs into a friend who has these two great kids from China, and she decides they're going to adopt from China because she's afraid that another birth child would have the same. It is genetic. And so they embark on this. Her husband loves their daughter, Clara, and sees all her imperfections as perfections, you know, and really adores him, but is willing to have the second child and go through the adoption. But it puts a strain on the relationship, and they have to say some hard things to each other about what they expect as a family and with children. So they go through quite a journey. Hmm. And what's interesting is the mom in China who had to abandon a twin daughter has to choose the one who she sees as the least perfect, the one who's flawed. And that is the one that goes to Carter and Suzanne, and they see her as perfect. So it raises a lot of questions of what is perfect.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. And the search for perfection mm-hmm. in a child,
yeah.
Just as, in my view, there are no perfect marriages.
Right.
There are no marriages made in heaven that I've ever encountered. Children, as tiny infants, may embody perfection, but they are human and they evolve mm-hmm. into all the perfections and imperfections yeah. that society offers.
Yeah, they're beautiful flaws, I always think
absolutely.
Of, right?
Absolutely. Yes. And another person, Karen, wants to know if this book, The Red Thread, is appropriate to give to her very bright Chinese godchild, who will be 13 this month?
That's a really good question. I really hope that the adopted Chinese children at some point do read the book. I don't know this particular child. The sections in China can be, I think some of them are a little harsh because those stories are harsh. Many of the women abandoning their babies are from rural areas. And so the life itself is represented harshly because it is, they're poor. And they're treated a little more cruelly than the stories of more educated city people. Not that people in cities aren't cruel. I don't mean to say that. But in this story. And so if she knows a lot about the history and culture of China and it wouldn't surprise her or upset her, I think it's a terrific idea.
Then Keith in Silver Spring writes, the process sounds as though overseas adoptions are out of monetary ability for middle-income people.
Yeah, that's a very good point. When we, the adoption world changes so much that a lot of what we experienced has actually changed already in 5 short years. China, at the time we adopted, was the most affordable place. Domestic adoption was the most expensive. Now, I've just talked to 2 different women who are adopting, and domestic was the most reasonably priced. So, again, you really have to do your research, and it changes all the time. Even which countries are open for adoption changes month by month.
And back to the Russian adoption.
Yes.
Was there and is there some problem there?
One of the issues in Russia is fetal alcohol syndrome. And actually, in China, that has not been a problem yet with babies adopted from China. Again, that's a cultural thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the drinking and that's cultural. But alcoholism changes a lot of the faces in China.
And to Syracuse, New York. Good morning, Susan.
Hello, Diane.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Anne.
Go right ahead, please.
Okay, thanks. I want to thank both of you so much for having this program today. I resonated with so many things that Anne was saying. In fact, I think my story was very similar to yours, Anne, as far as the 9 months wait we had when we got the picture and we worshiped the picture and so on and so on. I always say it's like a pregnancy, but I didn't have to go through any pain.
That's right.
But anyway, I just wanted to say just a couple things that have been our experience. Our daughter came to us, very small. She was 5.5 months old and only 11 pounds, but she was not malnourished. When we saw her, her face just lit up.
Oh.
And we always say that she chose us. This is what we tell her. We were told that her welfare house actually was, in addition to an orphanage, a place for elderly people to live.
Yes.
And we were told that she had something they called a rocking nanny or a rocking granny program there. We were not able to go to the house because we had seven different families from different welfare houses, but I understand that they paid these women a small stipend to have their children, have the child, for the months before the child was adopted, and to treat her like her own child.
Oh, that's lovely.
I wish we could do something like this in the United States, really.
Yes.
But one other thing is that just talking about the notion of not having access to your birth parents the way a lot of children who perhaps, you know, in the United States who could trace back their parents someday. Our child has so far, she's 14 now, not really been that interested in it. However, her friend, who is 9 months older than she, is very sad whenever she sees an Asian family. And she talks about feeling abandoned and feeling like she wished she could have an Asian family, even though she loves her adoptive parents. We've told our daughter everything from the very beginning, including the political situation in China. And we've told her that when she is older, 18 or older, we would love to go back to China with her and attempt to find them if that's possible.
Yes.
And I won't take much more time, but one of her little friends who is about Elizabeth's age has told us that she wants to be a geneticist when she grows up so that she can go back and do genetic testing for women who want to see if they can reconnect with their adoptive children.
You know, I think that's actually the answer to how they will be able to find their parents, is genetically. That's the only way.
That's a tough search. Tough search.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
All right, Susan, thanks so much for your call to Edmond, Oklahoma. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning. It's such a pleasure to listen to this conversation today.
Good.
Thank you.
My sister has done a lot of stuff in Africa and dealt with people that have come in for adoption, and she just is so desperate for people to talk about the parent side of it that are giving up their children for adoption.
Yes.
And I'm so grateful that you're talking about that because I'm pregnant right now and I have a two-year-old, and when the thing was happening in Haiti and all these people were rushing over and adopting children, my heart was just breaking for these parents in the situation that were opting to give up their children. And I just think that side of it needs to be talked about the mothers and the extended family that love these babies that don't have other options. And my sister often talks about that with adoption in Africa, how we just set up orphanages that aren't always doing things to actually help mothers raise their own children. And I know in China it's different, in other places it's different because of politics, but the other thing I was going to say is I have a cousin that adopted a son from Ethiopia, and they met the birth mother, and she was terrified about it in advance, but it was such a beautiful, rewarding experience for her.
Oh, I'm so glad.
It's one of the greatest honors of her life to meet this mom that was giving her a son.
Indeed.
Yeah, and very common in Ethiopia to meet the parents.
Really?
Yes, which is wonderful, wonderful. They're doing it for financial reasons, or their health is so poor and they want to kind of give a blessing to the families who are taking their children.
But how complicated and how difficult to be able to hand over.
I can't imagine.
I can't imagine either.
Brave women.
Your son is getting ready for college.
Don't remind me.
Can you believe it?
Yes, he's a junior in high school. We're doing the college tours every week off to some other fabulous school. He wants to pursue a BFA in acting. So we're seeing some amazing places.
And how is Annabelle?
She is great. She is beautiful. She is smart. She is funny. She's everything we hoped for. She was special made for us. She was definitely at the end of our red thread.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, thank you for
And Sam and Annabelle get along just beautifully.
Oh, do you know what she said to him? We live in Providence, and just the other day, with tears in her eyes, she said, Sam, would you please go to college at Brown so you can still live at home? Yeah. She's so sad that he will be leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go to Christine in Cincinnati, Ohio. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I cannot wait to read this book.
Thank you.
I'm an adoptive mom of two girls from China, a 7-year-old and an 18-month-old.
Oh.
And I have a lot of red thread stories, as I'm sure we all do, because we all feel like that baby was meant exactly for us.
Right.
But the reason I called was, you know, we initially went to China because I wasn't sure I wanted an open adoption, and I didn't want to really know much about the birth mother. That was a selfish thing on my part, maybe. But after having my daughters, I think about the birth mothers all the time.
Yes.
And wish so much that I could meet them and show them how beautiful their girls are. And on the weekend, I actually went to an event that we celebrated women touched by adoption, both domestically and I was there, and I was internationally thinking about the Chinese birth mother to my two girls.
Yes.
And it's a very healing process for me, and I just wanted to share that.
That's lovely. Thank you.
You know, it's I think there are a lot of people who are wondering, is there any way other than through the genetic
yes.
process, really, to discover these birth mothers?
You know, what we were given is a description of exactly what Annabelle had on when they found her.
Right.
And the exact time and date. And so I think...
And location.
And location.
Uh-huh.
And so if a mother wasn't... If the laws changed and there wasn't some sort of grandfathering in, you know, if you did it, you're still, you know, a criminal in a way, and they felt safe, there is that information. We have the newspaper clipping that states they found the baby. There's page after page of babies, pictures, what they had on and when and where they were found. And so that seems like a way to connect. If someone showed up and said, I dressed my baby in this, and on this day, put her here, we have the other piece.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Would you like to pursue that?
I would love for Annabelle to meet this woman, and I would like to thank her. I think this caller said it exactly right, to be able to thank her and show her that we took good care of her baby.
I think the other part of that, though, is a concern for the mother
mm-hmm.
and for the political difficulty that she found herself in
yes.
and may still feel that difficulty.
Absolutely. That it's so culturally ingrained that it's not going to go away, I think, very easily. There's a terrific nonfiction book called Wanting a Daughter, Needing a Son. And the writer actually could not find for years enough women to interview who would talk about it because they were so afraid of talking about it, to be able to tell us what the mothers felt. It took her years to get a group of women who would sit down and talk. But the thing about that book that really touched me was that not one woman could complete the interview without crying.
Huh.
Yeah.
Have the rules in China changed at all?
You know, they are loosening somewhat, especially in cities like Beijing and Shanghai. And the one-child policy, we see it as could only have a boy, but actually there are many complicated pieces to it. The provinces can change it slightly. So in some provinces, you can have, if your first child's a daughter, you can have a second child, but that has to be a boy. So then it's second and third daughters are the ones abandoned. Right. So there's many variations of that policy.
And so therefore, are there still a great many girls available for adoption in
Absolutely.
China.
They're still
and
out there.
And, of course, there are people who are calling and saying there are many children here in this country. Why did you have to go abroad?
Yeah. You know, actually, we didn't qualify because of various things in our own lives and histories and ages for some of the domestic adoption.
Oh, I see.
So that was one reason. The other was it was prohibitive financially for us.
Because far more expensive yes. here in the United States.
Lawyers involved, need I say more?
Wow.
You know,
wow.
And so we looked at it, and it just wasn't an option for us for a lot of reasons.
One final thing we ought to note, Anne, is that, of course, there's some knitting in your book.
I had to. I couldn't resist. Maya, when she waited in the hospital after her daughter's accident, began to knit. And just continued to knit, and it became almost a ritual, like a prayer. After the first, she'd meet families who wanted to adopt. She always sat and knit, and has, you know, miles of red yarn, which played into the red thread idea as
Are
well.
Are you still knitting?
I knit obsessively, which is a little redundant because all knitters are obsessive about it. Mostly dish rags, much to my husband's chagrin.
Well, congratulations on your continued efforts in that regard and for your new book, The Red Thread. Anne Hood is the author. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.
This is WAMU 88.5's Community Minute. I'm News Director Jim Asendio.
And I'm General Manager Karen Mathis.
The U.S. Surgeon General says obesity in America has more than tripled among 6 to 19-year-olds since 1980.
A lack of affordable fresh produce is one reason why obesity rates are rising. Community gardens and farms are trying to help by providing fresh produce and teaching healthy eating habits.
The Washington Youth Garden at the U.S. National Arboretum teaches children and families how to garden and cook the food they grow.
Common Good City Farm is an urban farm and education center that grows healthy food for low-income residents in D.C.
Common Good City Farm programs provide hands-on training in food production, healthy eating, and environmental sustainability.
More information is at WAMU.org. Click on Community.
Good morning. A Prairie Home Companion is coming up next on WAMU 88.5.
On the next State of the Reunion, New Orleans weathered the floods of Hurricane Katrina, only to find itself in a storm of violence.
In the musical community and a lot of communities in New Orleans, the reality is that it is commonplace to have a close friend or relative who's been murdered. It's almost the norm.
A community